Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Wavebreak Podcast. I'm your host, Dylan Kelly, founder of Wavebreak. We help Shopify stores stop leaking revenue with done-for-you email marketing. Every week on this show, I interview the people behind the top Shopify stores and get them to share their secrets. If you're enjoying the podcast, subscribe on iTunes, or you can sign up for our podcast email list down in the show notes below, and we'll notify you every time a new episode drops. This episode is brought to you by Wavebreak, my e-commerce email marketing agency that works exclusively with Shopify stores. If your email marketing isn't on point, you're leaving lots of money on the table. Head over to wavebreak.co to learn more about how you can hire an expert to do your email marketing for you. You'll stress less, make more money, and save tons of time. Once again, go to wavebreak.co to learn more. There's also a link down in the show notes. Now, today on the show, as usual, we've got an expert. We've got somebody who has experience working with top Shopify stores. You probably heard of him if you've listened to his podcast, the Unofficial Shopify Podcast. That's right. Today on the show, I'm chatting with Kurt Elster. And in today's conversation, we're diving into scaling. How do you take your Shopify store to the next level, specifically by looking at your funnel and fixing the leaks in it? So you've built this business, you built this Shopify store, it's successful, but you feel like you could be doing more. You have traffic, you have customers, but you just feel like you're leaving money on the table. Well, in today's episode, after you listen to it, you're going to have a big list of actionable, simple ideas. I mean, they're not easy, but they're simple ideas that you can apply to your Shopify store that are going to make you more money. Now, without any further ado, I just want to hop right into the episode. There's so many great actionable takeaways. Can't wait for you to hear them. So let's just hop right into it. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Kurt.
Hello. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Happy to be here.
Thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. I'm excited to talk about today's topic, which is at a high level, scaling your Shopify store. I know you've worked with lots of different stores. You've seen a lot of different things over your years of experience as a Shopify expert. And for the people who don't know you, can we just start with like, who are you and what's your story?
Sure. So I'm a Shopify expert who helps Shopify store owners uncover hidden profits in their stores. And I have been doing that since 2011. 2009, I quit my job to start an e-commerce platform, and turned out that was harder than I knew, but we were always shooting for the moon. And when that didn't work out, we started building brochure sites for local businesses to keep the lights on. And we had a friend who owned a bike shop, and he said, I hate my online store. Can you help it? Help me. And I said, well, there's this thing called Shopify that sounds pretty cool and it's easy, which is what you want. So let's try that. And again, always shooting for the moon. Our very first Shopify store, we built a custom theme. And the then head of their brand new partner program, the Shopify Experts program, Dan Evelay, who's a wonderful man, super nice, even by Canadian standards, invited us to become Shopify experts. We did, and that, little did I know, was a just pivotal moment for us. And we, you know, at the same time, we're building sites for like Verizon, the NFL, Hilton Hotels, as a partner for agencies in Chicago. We're in Chicago, and we'd finished those projects, and we'd like need a palate cleanser. They were so rough because we're the low man on the totem pole. You're so far removed from the client with these big projects, and then. Versus the Shopify stuff, we'd finish those and go, well, that was easy. It wasn't that it was easy, it's that we were good at it. And it took me like a good 2 years to figure that out. But once I did, I said, man, why are we doing anything else? Let's just do Shopify. And it turns out, I think at that time it would have been when we like fully committed to Shopify exclusively. I think that would have been 2014. And we hitched our cart to the right horse, because it has just been a rocket ship ever since. I was just looking at our numbers, our revenues recently, and we're up, our consulting services are up 117% revenue over last year, which is great to see. But yeah, it's just been a continued wonderful success.
Yeah, Shopify, it's amazing. Like ever since I doubled down on it, doing email exclusively for Shopify store owners, it's just the community is great. Like it's hard to find a good community of just like cool people. Like I haven't really met anybody who I'm like, man, I really hate that person. in the Shopify space. I don't know if it's because Shopify is a Canadian company or what, and they're just like spreading all the happiness around, or what they're doing.
No, I it is not by mistake. They have, from day one, at least when I, you know, when I signed up, they have been really concentrating and putting a lot of effort into fostering that community and that ecosystem. So when people ask me, oh, Kurt, what's your favorite Shopify feature? I say the ecosystem, because there is always, you know, no matter what you need, there's going to be a app, service, partner, et cetera, that can do what you want. And then along with that, man, a rising tide lifts all ships. Everyone attached to it is just been phenomenal and helpful. And I have rarely had a negative interaction with another Shopify partner.
Yeah. And same with store owners. Like they're all really great people. I get along with them all. And speaking of Shopify, so you've seen a lot of Shopify stores grow. You've seen the platform grow. And like I said, today I wanted to talk a little bit about scaling. Like as a Shopify entrepreneur, let's say I'm a Shopify store owner. I have my traffic, my Facebook ads are pumping, I've got email going. As we hop into this, like how do I scale this bad boy?
So the approach I have taken in everything has always been to keep it simple. But as you're scaling the store, you want to have a scorecard for your business, for your online store, for the business in general. And ideally, you know, you don't want it to be qualitative. You want it to be quantitative. So you want key performance indicators that you watch in your business. And that could be, you know, like for the business as a whole, that could be profit and revenue. For the online store itself, that's going to be traffic, conversion rate, and you could break that down, average order value, customer lifetime value, and repeat customer rate. Those are going to be the key metrics, key performance indicators, the scorecard for your online store. And I think every month you want to look at those metrics and say, all right, because all of those, if you could increase any of those numbers, that is going to be a conversion lever that increases your business, that increases your revenue, profit, whatever. So every month, look at those and go, all right, which of these is the bottleneck? Which is the lowest? Which is the one I should work on? And then work on just that one thing. Don't, you know, try to do multiple initiatives, because we only have so much time. We only have so many resources, time, money, and space in our heads for these things. And I think that's one of the biggest mistakes I see people make. They get overwhelmed because they try to move the needle on every aspect of their business all at once. And at the end of the month, instead of moving their business a mile forward, they've gone an inch in every direction.
Yeah, I love the way you said that too, especially like levers to grow your business and then which is the bottleneck and then pulling the lever to, you know, alleviate that bottleneck. So like,
so I'll give you an example.
Yeah, give me an example.
If I've got, all right, so you've got a store and let's say early on you're getting 200 visitors a day, which we'll say like that, you know, that means you've got traction and you're struggling to get more traffic and your conversion rate feels pretty solid. So what do? You can't, you're not getting more customers and you're not going to convert any more of your existing traffic. Well, you could increase the average order value. And immediately, without getting more customers, without changing, without, you know, investing in conversion rate optimization, you're making more money. And how do you do that? Well, a product upsell app would do it. Offering product bundles could do it. Experimenting with existing product upsells based on data, like a free app like Bold Brain will tell you, you know, products that correlate together by doing website card analysis, with email marketing, right? Extend that customer lifetime value by doing your upsells after the fact based on what product they bought. So that's what's interesting about it is you can, and if you get those numbers up, now you could get, you've got a, since we haven't changed traffic and we haven't changed conversion rate, but we've got average order value up or customer lifetime value up, now we know our return on ad spend for our Facebook ads, Google ads, whatever our ads are, is going to be that much higher. And I think return on ad spend, especially with Facebook ads, should be one of your KPIs, key performance indicators. And, you know, so that's, you could see like the network effects this has, and that, all right, now that I've increased average order value and customer lifetime value, I could turn around and spend more on those Facebook ads. I could have even I've got a higher return on ad spend, so I can experiment more. I can even have a poorer result with my Facebook ads and still weather it. You can experiment. So you could see, like, having that focus on a single thing at a time and tying it to KPIs really gives is a tremendous way to keep growing the business. Now, one of the things you said, all right, but what about as you're scaling? Okay, as you scale, I think one of the things you have to consider is customer support. And that's what we've seen with those businesses that are getting into, like, as they go from six figures to seven figures to getting, you know, further up the chain in seven figures, is oftentimes we get the best results for them by first fixing, using like UX stuff to like website tweaks to solve customer service problems for them. So now they're freed up more. Now they've happier customers. Now they can start going back and investing into those other levers.
Totally. And one thing I really like that you said is like kind of like, well, the levers, first things first, levers are huge as you grow. And as you start focusing on those KPIs and increasing one at a time, before you know it, you've increased a few, even if it's just by a few percentage points. Like, you, like just by increasing a few of those metrics, you can literally double your business. And I saw this in one of my clients. So at Wavebreak, we do done-for-you email marketing for Shopify stores. So this is kind of another example. But through email, we were able to increase the lifetime value of customers. And in doing that, they were able to spend more to acquire a customer. And then just by able to do that, you know, you increase your ad spend. Now, all of a sudden, you know, your business literally doubles. And you increase another metric at the same time. And it's just the growth can be explosive, all by knowing your numbers and then taking action one step at a time. Before you know it, your business is just taken off and you don't even know what happened.
Well, yes, it's a good problem to have.
Right. And that's when you have the customer support and it's like different headaches. But anyway, let's say, so you're a Shopify conversion rate optimization expert. Let's say conversions are my bottleneck. You touched a little bit on the UX UI side of things. A client comes to you and they want to, maybe they're struggling, like they're getting a decent amount of traffic, but they know that that traffic could be converting. I know so many people say my website's converting pretty well, but I just feel like it could be doing better. Like, I feel like people are falling through the cracks. Like where do you even start with that?
All right. If you're looking at your conversion rate and you go, you know, I think it could be better. The only way to know if it could be better is based on the funnel. So sometimes and the top of the funnel is going to be what? Quality of traffic. So it could be that the ad that you're running that gets clicks to whatever landing page it's landing on does not necessarily is not necessarily converting well. It's not doing its job well. So you could figure that out by checking the bounce rate on these things. So that's where it gets a little complicated, in that conversion rate optimization also includes quality of traffic. It includes the stuff that happened before people got to the site. And as your traffic grows, we often see as traffic goes up, conversion rate starts going down, and it's because you're getting more varied traffic. That's okay. But that's my caveat when discussing conversion rate optimization, is it could be more than the site. You got to consider the traffic too.
Gotcha.
All right. So assuming you've got a handle on that, and the trick is, you know, checking bounce rates on ads, checking quality scores on ads, having a remarketing funnel in place, ideally. But all right, we've got that down. On the website itself, the first thing is to look at your in Shopify, go in your analytics, find your online store conversion rate card, and it'll give you the conversion rate percentage. But it'll also give you the add to cart rate, the reach checkout rate, and the purchase rate, which is the conversion rate. And we'll say an unoptimized store, so a store that is not broken in any way, but has not had someone, a conversion rate optimization specialist or someone like that, obsessively go over it, you're going to expect that each number would be roughly half of the previous number. So if I've got 8% add to cart rate, that would be a good add to cart rate, 8%. Then I'd expect, all right, 4% reach checkout and 2% purchase. And if there's one of those numbers has like a massive drop off, all right, now we've started to narrow down where the issue is. So if it goes like 8% add to cart, but only 2% reach checkout, okay, that tells you if I could fix that one step, this will improve things. Or if I've got like 8% add to cart, 6% reach checkout, 1% purchase. Ah, so that tells me there's a styling issue in the checkout itself. Like, it is stunning how often people forget to add their logo, colors, and typography to checkout. Or the common issue I see. The biggest objection in checkout is going to be to shipping rates. And the big mistake I see is either not offering free shipping or offering too many shipping rates, right? Go buy from Amazon. They'll offer you two, maybe three shipping rates. It's going to be like, here's your free shipping. Here's your free standard shipping. Here's 2 day. Here's 1 day. And if you're Prime, it's just like, here's 2 day. Here's 1 day. And that's it. Whereas in Shopify makes it too easy. If you set up carrier calculated rates, I have seen stores that fire up and there's 20 shipping rates in there. Ah, you want every step of the way with conversion rate optimization. It's just about making the process as frictionless as possible, removing all those speed bumps. A choice is a speed bump. And the more choices there are, the more speed bumps. So if you could simplify your shipping rates, great. That's a really common issue I see, which is why I brought it up. I could keep going forever.
Yeah. No. So one thing you said is that like a big mistake is not having free shipping. Do you think a lot of stores are missing out by charging shipping or using a shipping threshold or anything like that? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think having the free shipping threshold, I think, is important. But generally I say base it off your, look at your average order value, add say 10% onto that, round it up and make that your free shipping threshold. So use it as a way to get more people to spend more to increase your average order value. So I wouldn't necessarily do it like, you know, all orders ship free. I would do it, you know, if your average order value was $25, then I'd say, all right, well, why not try doing free shipping at $30 or $35? Having no free shipping option, that's the mistake.
Gotcha. Yeah. I like that too. And that's something as somebody who, you know, does email for Shopify stores, like one of the most successful abandoned cart emails is just addressing shipping objections. Like too many people try to throw away, you know, 50% off your order, or, you know, whatever discount, when really the person only left because they didn't want to pay $4 for shipping.
Yeah. And that's the, that's what I talked about earlier, like the full funnel. Having a remarketing funnel in place, including abandoned cart emails, can help rescue that stuff. But man, like early on, you know, just have that free shipping option and reduce the total shipping options and save yourself the headache to begin with.
Right. So okay, so we've got our, so we dove into our analytics. We know our add to cart rate. We know our reach to checkout rate. We know how many people are purchasing, and we kind of see the cracks now. We see the crack. We want to fix that step in the funnel. Like, what are some specific mistakes that you see people making? Like, whether it's in design or we touched on shipping, but like in the actual, like some specific design mistakes that you see people making that could easily, I guess, solve some of these drop offs that people have.
So the biggest thing that people struggle with, and the thing that like is the most important that no one seems to pay much attention to, is their main menu navigation, right? Like I'm on an online store. All right, what's the keyword there? Store. How many Shopify stores do you land on where the main menu is a whole bunch of shit that's not related to shopping? It's they got like shop, and then they, and then after that's like about us, FAQ, contact us,
track order,
charity, yeah, giving back, charity, my account, like, and all this just nonsense. Versus go to Amazon's site, look how they have not taken all of their categories and rammed them under a single drop down called shop, have they? They have broken them out. And then there's no other nonsense up there. It is all about shopping. So that's what you should do. Take those, all that secondary stuff that can live, unless you're like really obsessed with getting people to an FAQ page, take all that nonsense, put it in your footer. If you're using a theme like Turbo, put it in the top menu, and then take your cute little shop drop-down menu and get rid of it. Break all that stuff out. And, you know, merchants have this resistance to having more than one link to the same thing, but that ignores that people shop in different ways. They don't shop like you, the merchant. They shop the way they want to, and you're not going to be able to control that. So let's say you've got an apparel store. You could do shop by gen, you know, break it out, go shop men, shop women's, and then shop by type. So we like jeans, tops, etc. Give them multiple entry points and ways to sort it and get to what they want. And you have to start thinking like a librarian. Start thinking in terms of taxonomy. And it is okay if a product lives in multiple collections or categories. That's fine. Give them, you know, just give people access to shopping the way they want to. And resist doing, you know, having giant, huge, endless collections. That can be intimidating. Honestly, if I want to increase cart conversion rate, well, I got to start at the top and that could mean increasing the add to cart rate. If I increase the add to cart rate, I know I'll increase the conversion rate. And the way you do that is by making your products findable. Make it as easy as possible for people to get to the right product. And a couple ways to do that, like fixing the main menu navigation for sure, but featuring your, you know, go with what you know with what works, and feature your best-selling products right on the homepage. Like the Pareto's principle, the chances are 80% of your revenue comes from 20% of your products. Why don't you just list those 20% of products on the homepage? And if you've got a ton of products, you know, people always have a plan for adding more products. I'm going to add this product, I'm going to add that product, we're going to acquire more stuff, we're going to add, you know, in Q3, we're going to add 10 products. No one has a plan for getting rid of stuff. They just let the inventory build and build. If you're adding stuff, then, you know, make part of your plan every quarter, we're going to ditch the bottom 10 to 15% of stuff. That way the most successful stuff comes to, you know, the cream rises to the top.
Yeah, I love that. And one thing I really like that you said is that people don't shop like you, the store owner. I see, like, in Facebook groups, private communities, and even talking with people, like, a lot of store owners kind of have this, I don't know if it's just like belief system where it's like, ooh, I wouldn't like to get that many emails, or ooh, I wouldn't like to get a text message, or ooh, I wouldn't like this. but that doesn't mean other people don't like that, or other people won't convert from it, or that whatever, you know, whether it's a main menu navigation or, you know, an email sequence, it doesn't mean that it's not going to work. And that's why it's important to test these things too. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You have to let go of that idea. What you like ultimately doesn't matter. I mean, it comes down to what the customers like. And if it is a question of, you know, oftentimes the issue is, well, we don't know. All right, we'll get someone who does, who's done it before, to set it up for you, and then verify it. Use heat maps. That's what, like, even my idea of best practice, best case, best usability may not be how people actually use things. So often as a, once we've gone through, like, okay, we set this up using best practice, then step two is, let's run heat maps to verify it. Let's look at first, A, what element, you know, I hammered on getting garbage out of your main menu. We can use heat maps to figure that out. Run those heat maps, use a free service like Hotjar, and figure out, okay, what elements are people not clicking on? Well, if they're not clicking on it, maybe I should just get rid of it. It's not doing anything. And that makes the stuff they do click on that much easier to find, and more obvious. So that, like, that's a great strategy alone. It's just get rid of the stuff that no one uses.
Exactly. And another thing is too, is like, don't trust somebody who says they have all the answers, because the best marketers, the best designers, the best conversion rate optimizations experts will tell you to test. That's what it really comes down to. Start with the best practices and then build on it. And now one thing, or one company you keep bringing up over and over again is Amazon. And I mean, if you look at, for me, when I look at the Amazon order page, I don't think it's the most beautiful thing ever. But I mean, obviously it converts like crazy. I mean, they're killing it. Well, what other e-commerce companies besides Amazon, do you pay attention to and get it right in terms of conversion rate optimization?
I think Wayfair is really neat. But what's going on really is ultimately it doesn't matter what I think. What's happening is the largest stores are setting the precedent. So the stores that a lot of people have shopped, that could be Amazon, Walmart has their online store revenue has increased 40% this year due to a redesign. So I pay attention to them. Target's okay. They invest a lot in it. I don't necessarily agree with everything they do, but what's going on is whether or not you like it, like what they do, or appreciate it, it is setting the standard. It is training your customers how to shop. You spend more time on your own site than anyone else, but everyone else spends time on these large retail sites like Amazon, Target, Wayfair, House, etc., depending on the category. And that has trained them on this is how, you know, a website should work. This is how an e-commerce experience should be. So it is, you know, it is worthwhile to survey your customers and ask them, hey, where else do you shop? Where do you get your stuff? And then look at those sites and see if there's common design patterns that you can borrow. And the advantage there is that when someone lands on your site for the first time, they already know how to use it. You don't want to reinvent the wheel. You want to show them what they know.
Yeah, and that's freaking genius. Like, I think it'd be easy to answer, like, oh, here are the most beautiful websites I've ever seen, you know, and then you name off, like, the most, the biggest venture-backed direct-to-consumer companies in the world, or you know, whatever.
The dark truth is the beautiful stuff doesn't convert. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a designer at heart, I love design, but, it looks cool, it impresses other designers, but it doesn't necessarily convert. Like, stuff that is simpler and plainer and easier to use, that's the stuff that converts really well. Like, I was cruising Home Depot's website, and then I got curious and I checked Lowe's website, and they're really, like, they focus incredibly on taxonomy and structure and how products are organized, and not much on design. And the best sites will also focus on, like, typography. The web is 90% text. So you have to make it as readable as possible, especially when we're doing it on all different devices and screen sizes. That could just having that an obsessive focus on typography and readability, as opposed to like a really cool font in an incredibly light gray that looks neat, but it's not going to be particularly useful for anybody. So you got to focus on like, man, what's going to be easiest to use? Because if you're getting all, you know, designy for the sake of impressing designers, your customers aren't going to put up with your bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. And then your business dies.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's like, which do you, you know, you want to be pretty or make money? It's up
yeah,
to you.
Yeah, exactly. I know. And that's the biggest thing as a business owner. Like, you have to let go of your ego and let go of what you like and not cave and give in to, you know, the crappy customers, but just don't waste the resources that you have. Anyway, you've mentioned a lot of great tips and actionable steps. Like, as we wrap up here, like, what are some low-hanging action steps that I can take no matter where I am towards increasing my conversions and getting more people through my funnel successfully?
Number one, go look at your products. Figure out what is your best-selling number one product, and then make sure at all times, from the homepage, from wherever I am, that product is a one click away. So if I land on your homepage, you should not have a carousel slider. 89% of people will only ever see the first one. Why have the other slides there? Just have a one single slide that has one button that takes me directly to your best-selling product. And then below that, let's have a featured collection of your best-selling products. And that's easy to do. And like, give me the stuff that's in stock. Make an automated collection. Call it Trending Now. And I like that name, Trending Now. Walmart does that.
Yeah, I like that too.
And you give
better
it two rules,
like,
you say.
You might also like. I like the
yes.
Trending Now better.
Yeah, it sounds better. Gives it, there's a, like, implied social proof there. And then, you know, in the theme, say, I want to meet two, a smart collection, I want to meet two conditions. Product price is greater than zero, so we don't want our free products. And product inventory is greater than zero. We don't want stuff that's out of stock. And then sort by best selling. Done. You have now made an automatic collection that's self-optimizing. It will always show your best-selling in-stock products and then feature that collection on your homepage. So as, you know, as things change, you don't have to think about it. That will list it. And then sort out that navigation. Break it out. So I want the first three links, four links, five links of your main menu. All of those should take me to a collection or a product.
Boom. There you have it, folks. I love it. I love it. You made it super easy for everybody to sell more. You've broken it down step by step. I don't even think there's any questions about like what you need to do next after this episode. But speaking of what's next, like, where can we go to learn more about you and what you do, Kurt?
Sure. Google me. Head to KurtElster.com. Sign up right there. Big sign up. Sign up for my newsletter. Those emails get sent from my actual email address. So if you reply to it, if you send me a thoughtful question, I will send you a thoughtful reply. And if you are particularly lucky, say, hey, here's my site. Would you mind doing a quick teardown of it? I will fire up my screencast recorder and I will send you a quick like 8-minute walkthrough with a bunch of ideas to test, to try, to see if it improves your conversion rate.
Awesome. And I've seen some of Kurt's screen shares before. He knows his stuff. So definitely take advantage of that and try to be one of the first people to message him, because I mean, just listen to the stuff he says. He's checking out Home Depot's website, Lowe's website. He's seen it all. He knows what he's doing. You can check out EtherCycle.com for their case studies. And like he said, KurtElster.com. Go sign up for his email list. I'm on his email list. I love it. It's great. It's really fun, actually, to be on your email list. It's not like your typical boring e-commerce tip of the day, blah, blah, blah. Especially right when you sign up, you get added to, I don't know, this is like his secret sauce. You get added to his drip campaign. It's really good. A lot of really great info on there on growing your store and taking things to the next level.
I try to make it fun. It's important to have fun with it.
It's good. It's good. It's I get enough boring email in my inbox. It's always exciting to get a Kurt Elster email in my inbox. So definitely go check him out. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Kurt. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Now, listener, before I sign off, stop me if this sounds familiar. Your email marketing is stuck. You feel like you could be doing email better. You're not generating enough email revenue, and you feel like you're leaving money on the table. But you don't have the time to figure email out yourself or do it on your own because you have a business to run. Imagine this. Imagine not having to worry about leaving money on the table with your email marketing. Imagine not having to figure out what to send, when to send it, how many emails should look, what automation you need, what segments you need, how often you should be contacting your email list, or just worrying about sending the next email. You don't have to worry about any of that. Imagine having peace of mind knowing that your email marketing is generating sales in good hands. At Wavebreak, we help Shopify stores maximize their email marketing revenue. That's it. We don't do anything else. And we've created a system called the Wavebreak Method that, number one, makes you less dependent on Facebook or other marketing channels. Let's say something bad happens. Facebook says, see you later, Shopify store, and they just completely kill your ad traffic overnight. You don't have to worry. You don't have to stress because you're good to go because you have a cushion of email revenue. You don't have to worry about how or what your wife is going to do or if you're going to be able to make rent or if you're going to be able to pay people because you have this cushion of email revenue to rely on. Number two, the second thing this does is huge. And it's how stores scale from 7 figures to 8 figures to 9 figures. And the secret is repeat purchases. The Wavebreak method gets rid of one-time buyers and increases repeat orders. Number three, it keeps your email list engaged. You don't have to worry about Black Friday and beyond. We'll figure out the ideal amount of times that your list needs to be contacted to maximize revenue, and then we'll execute it for you. If you want to learn more about this system and how we can work together to apply it to your business, go to wavebreak.co to schedule a call with me. And I'll personally send you my calendar link and we can chat one-on-one. Now, I don't have unlimited time to do these calls. I can only do a couple of them per week. So if you want to get your call, go sign up at wavebreak.co for it as soon as possible and we can talk about how we can work together. Thanks for listening to this episode. Subscribe to the show on iTunes to get notified of new episodes as soon as they drop.